There's a question that somebody, Joey left out a question, and I want to take it up, but I just want to finish up two things. There's a lot of side points there, so I just want to finish up two short things, and then we'll get to Joey left's question. Okay. I just want to mention that, and again, I mean, we're on Vayita Eshel Bever Shava, Vayikra Shom B'Shem Arishem Kelovam. Right, as you see, I mean, that pasuk contains the world, basically. And we're slowly unraveling some of the meaning of the pasuk. But I just want to mention a side point, and that is, why is that pasuk in that parsha? Okay? In other words, Vayita Eshel Bever Shava, it's Bereshis Chafalos Lama Gimel, Vayikra Shem B'Shem and Hashem Kelolam. So Chazal say that that was a whole approach which we went through, and it seems like the pasuk is sort of like out of place. Well, what is it doing in that parsha? That's my question. Then the parsha ends, Vayogar Avraham, Beretz Plishtim Yom Rabin. Yeah. So according to the way we explained it, it fits in very well. Because we said that the change, that pasuk reflects the change in Avraham Avinu's methodology. The methodology that he used in Be'er Shava was a new methodology, one that he didn't use in before, when he traveled around, and when he was in Hebron, and when he traveled around from the beginning, but we said that over there, in Vayita Eshel Bever Shava, was a new approach. It was an approach where he showed the people that, Minei Ubei, so to speak, from their own lives, that if there's no Shem Hashem Kelolam, then there's no such thing as ethics and justice. And that's really why it's in that parsha, because that parsha is the parsha where Avraham Avinu saw that Avimelech was a just person. Okay? And that's the whole parsha. He basically him of him of Avimelech Sichasar Tzvah Avraham Lehmor Lekim Imcha B'Kol V'Chol Asher Atah Oseh. And then he wanted justice. He wanted a bris. Yishev Lev Lekim Heino and Tishka Li Umini Unechti Kacheser Asher Asisi Imcha Tasa Imodi. So Avimelech was laying claim to justice. And you see, Vochiach Avram es Avimelech, al odos beramayim asher gozlu avde Avimelech. So Avram Avinu saw that he was a man of justice, he wants justice, so he gave him tochacha. He criticized him, corrected him. And Avimelech backed off. So once Avraham Avinu, the idea that Avraham Avinu saw that Avimelech was willing to conform to justice, so that's why, you see, after that whole incident, I can't call him a kumuber shava, kishem nizbushneim. Vayichsu bris bever shava. So then it was vayita eish, and then vayichem as nach sichasat shava yeshua l'aretz plishtim. So after you see that he was a man of justice, recognized justice, that's why Avraham Avinu got the idea vayita eishel bever shava vayikrasham b'shem adashem kelolam, that he utilized the concept of justice which they recognize as a means to show them that justice, real justice, can only be based on God, and that God is the creator of the universe. B'Shem HaRashem Kelolam. Okay, because without that, there is no such thing as justice. I just wanted to show you that it's not a pasuk. It seems at first sight the pasuk is just out of place. The whole idea of Eshel sounds like something that's apart, but really it fits in exactly and belongs in that parsha. Okay. That's one point I wanted to mention. Another point I wanted to mention is by Avraham Avinu, second point, in Hilchos Avos Kochavim, Why does the Rambam say, when the Rambam gives a description and of everything in Tulaf Ram, he says, well, Derech Hazeh, in the end of, in Perek Aleph, Avos Kochavim, in the end of Halacha Beis, he says, Val derech zeh hoy olam holech umezgalgel, achen nolad amudo shel olam, v'hu Avram Avinu. Why does he call him amudo shel olam? So I want to mention that the that amudo shel olam is a term that the Rambam already used before in the very first halacha. Yesoda yesodos v'omud hachachmos. Leida sheyesham motzi rishon. So the amud of all chachma, the basis, now we spoke about at length in a different shiur, that the basis of all chachma is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God. So that's why the Rambam calls Avram Avinu Amudo Shel Olam, because as he describes in the next halacha, he was the one that discovered that the whole world works by Chachma, and he discovers, and through Chachma, the fact that that there is the world works according to Chachma is the basis of Yediyas Hashem. That's the basis of Yediyas Hashem. That's why he calls Mamud Shalom. It's based on his very first the Rambam's very first statement. Yisodei Yisodos V'Omud HaChachmos, and Avram Avinu's Amud Shalom means Avram Avinu was the one that revealed the whole foundation of the universe, of how man understands the universe, and that is through Chachma, and that is based on the existence of God. Okay, the second point. Like I said, there's some points I just wanted to pick up. Yeah, another point that I just want to mention briefly, I mean, it's sort of like a kind of a little bit of a synopsis, that the whole philosophy... Hey. Yes?
Does that mean that Adam Rishon didn't have this understanding? I mean, Adam Rishon, the uses Chachma to give names to all the...
No. Amudah Shalom means the, insofar as the world's knowledge of God. That is through Avram, it's not through Adam. Okay? The next... now... like a synopsis of everything we've been saying over here, that according to the way the Rambam is explaining the whole philosophy of Avram Avinu and the philosophy of Yadus, the Derech Hashem, is that Asiya and Limud are really not that far apart. Okay, that Asiya and Limud are tied together in a way where they're interwoven. They're interwoven. Because Asiya and Limud, and we'll come back to this later. A lot of points. I must say, I mean, I have to apologize for not being that organized, but we'll come back to, I just want to make sure we cover all the points. But the idea that we've been saying that Asiya, that if a person lacks in his perfection, he's going to lack in his Chachma. So that Asiya and Limud are really very closely connected. They're not like two different spheres. But Asiya and Limud are really two sides of one coin. The Limud and the Asiya are really work hand in hand to bring the soul of man to a certain from a potential state to an actual state, actualizing the soul, and then maybe we'll get into this is based on another philosophy of the Rambam, which is in the Mora, which we'll get to. I'm throwing it out because I want to just mention it now, and maybe you'll remind me, we'll come back to it. But right now, what I want to take up is Joey Lichter's question. Joey Lichter asked the question. Joey, are you there?
Yeah,
he is.
Okay, you want to just raise the question?
The question talking about, I guess a couple weeks ago when you mentioned about that you shouldn't give a person an answer who's perplexed, I wasn't sure if you meant that by giving a person that answer, is it actually a pagam immediately, or is it just that you are preventing him from reaching a higher level because now he can't further pursue knowledge? I thought maybe Nachman might be somebody, say, who's on his deathbed, who is not going to pursue knowledge anyway. If you give a guy the answer, do you actually hurt him right now, or he's just not going to further gain?
Well, in other words, would there be any benefit on the person's deathbed to give him the answer? That's the question. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, before I go into that, let me just just a matter of organization here, but let me just go back to the point before. With Asi and Limud. That Asi and Limud are one. I'll come back to that later. All right. Let's take a question now. Okay. So, to answer your question, I'm going to have to go into this. I really wasn't going to go into this because I wanted to continue with the theme of Mizbeach and Vayikra Shem B'Shem Hashem Kelolam. But which we'll get back to. But I see that this is a problem, and it's worthwhile going into. But it is a little bit of an aside. Okay. So in order to understand that, you have to take a look at the Mora and his introduction. All right. And the introduction is on page 2. There's one paragraph there on the bottom of page 2, and it continues on to page 3. I'm going by the Dover edition. Okay? And the Rambam says like this. The Rambam says that I do not presume to think that this treatise settles every doubt in the minds of those who understand it, but I maintain that it settles the greater part of their difficulties. Okay. All right. Which is in line with what I'll come back to that idea in a second. That's what it is. It says, no intelligent man will require and expect that on introducing any subject, if I forget a point, I'm having trouble a little bit organizing everything. So if I forget a point, just raise the question. If I don't come back to something, I don't want to try not to leave too many loose threads there. Okay, so like I said, no intelligent man will require and expect that on introducing any subject I shall completely exhaust it, or that on commencing the exposition of a figure I shall fully explain all its parts. As the Rambam says, such a course could not be followed by a teacher in a viva voce exposition, means mouth to mouth, much less by an author in writing a book, without becoming a target for every foolish, conceited person to discharge the arrows of folly at him. So the Rambam says over here, he says that he can't explain everything in detail, because if he does, he's just going to become a target for everyone to shoot arrows at him. And in spite of this, he still became a target. But he says that he went as far as he could go, and if he went any further, then simply it would have been a real catastrophe. Obviously, the Rambam was right, because in the end, he was correct. I mean, Masha Niba Ben Es Niba. See, in the end, he did emerge, and he wrote one of his letters that after he dies, and in spite of all the tax on him, that he'll be known as the Sefer will be known as the greatest Sefer, which was true. I mean, it was true. So he knew exactly what he was doing. I mean, he knew the limit to what he could absorb and what he couldn't absorb, and he realized that he went as far as he could go, and that if he went any further in explaining things in detail, that every conceited fool. Would attack him, as he says, discharge the arrows of folly at him, and that would be something which would be disastrous for the world at large. Now he says like this. He says that's one thing. Then he says some general principles bearing upon this point have been fully discussed in our works on the Talmud. Okay, he means the Yad. Then he says, we also stated that the expression Maisa Bereishis signified natural science, and Maisa Merkava, metaphysics, and we explained the force of the rabbinical dictum. The Maisa Bereishis must not be fully expounded, even in the presence of a single student, unless he be wise and able to reason for himself, And even then, I'm sorry, Matz Makava. And even then, you should merely acquaint him with the heads of the different sections of the subject. That's Maisa Makava. Okay. So that we explained last time. The Maisa Bereshis, have definitions. Maisa Bereshis, you just have to be careful that the student understands it. But it's something which has definitions, and if the Rambam is in the yard over here with it, just a second. He says the Rambam. Just give me a second. I said the Rambam in the yard. It's in Yesod HaTorah. Where he says like this. He says, "Uma beninyan ma'isa merkava leinyan ma'isa bereshis." Sheinyan ma'isa merkava afilu leechvad ein dorshin. Alim keno yachacham amazin midaita mosim la'roshi prakim. Zinyan ma'isa bereshis melamdim asal liyachid. Af pi she'ein amazin asal midaita. Umadim asal kol ma sheyochal leidam edvarim elo. So he says over there with regard to Maisa Bereshis, the question is the student, you're permitted, since it's a subject which has definitions, so you only have to make sure that the student understands exactly what you're saying. You can't be dashing barabim because people will get the wrong ideas, walk away with the wrong ideas. But Maisa Merkava is something, as I said last time, There are no definitions. The definitions become very vague, and it's the soul functions and has a grasp. The soul can have a grasp of it. The intuitive intellect can have a grasp of it, but you can't really define it. Ultimately, it cannot be defined. But a certain level of definition, but it's really the grasp of the soul on the area. That's significant. That's really what the Rambam says over here in the first sentence of this paragraph. He says, "I do not presume to think that this treatise settles every doubt in the minds of those who understand it. Even if you understand it, it doesn't settle every doubt. But I maintain that it settles the greater part of their difficulties." Which means to say that in this area of Maisa Merkava, the important thing is that the soul should relate to the area in a proper way and have a proper grasp of an approach, an attitude. The soul should, in other words, should reach a level where it relates to the subject matter in a certain manner, because that's all you can expect. You see, it's a different kind of a subject. Whereas Maisa Bereshis, which is the natural sciences, over there are concrete definitions, and the only thing is that a person should make sure they're not misunderstood and somebody walk away with the wrong ideas. Because if you have a wrong idea of Maisa Bereshis, so that's going to affect. That's going to affect your Yedias Hashem, but it's not something which you're not permitted to teach an intelligent student who has the capacity. You can give him the ideas and you can teach him the definitions. He doesn't have to go on his own in that area. But in the area of metaphysics, that's an area where you cannot teach him. The soul has to approach it on its own, and if it's not on its own, it has no value. Okay, it's a different kind of a thing. Okay, but I'm not going to go into that too much. What I want to go into is this, that the Rambam continues, and he says like this. He says that, you must therefore not expect from me more than such heads. He continues, and he says, and even these have not been methodically and systematically arranged in this work, but have been, on the contrary, scattered and are interspersed with other topics, which we shall have occasion to explain. Okay, the Rambam says that he didn't really, it's not explained methodically and systematically. If you're looking for such kind of an explanation in the Murray, you're not going to find it. He purposely scattered it, and he interspersed it with other topics. In other words, under the surface of the Murray, I mean, there are deep waters that are there, and they emerge in certain places. They're scattered. It comes up in certain areas. But the depth of the Mora is hidden, and it only appears at certain points. It breaks to the surface in a scattered manner. And I just want to mention something, and I'm going to take the liberty of saying that where did the Rambam get that method from? I believe that's the same method. He was imitating the method of the Torah. The Torah does the same thing. The Torah also has underlying Yesodos, and that's the whole idea of the Ibn Ezra's Yesodos. And these and the Rambans, I mean, everybody, all the Bali and the Sora knew this, that underlying the surface of the Torah are deep Yesodos, and they appear, they're scattered, and they appear here and there. But a person knows when he's uncovered them because they really are fundamental. They're fundamentals, and they appear in, they break the surface in different spots. And basically what the Rambam was doing was imitating the same exact style of the Torah. Now, it says like this, my object in adopting this arrangement is that the truth should be at one time apparent and at another time concealed. Thus, we shall not be in opposition to the divine will, which has withheld from the multitude the truths required for the knowledge of God. According to the word, the secret of the Lord is with them that fear him. So this, the Rambam says, is the this is part of God's will. And this is the Shittas Rambam. I mean, Shittas Rambam in the... it appears, like he says, like the Rambam says, this very sheet appears in different places. It's in the beginning of the Pirush Mishnayos, where he talks about what the purpose of the Hamon Am is. And over here he mentions that it's the divine will that most of humanity should not have access to these ideas, which really are the most important ideas, because they are the truths required for the knowledge of God. But nevertheless, it's the divine will that those truths should be hidden from most of humanity. And the Rambam says, and therefore he cannot deviate from God's will. So the Rambam at first sight would seem to be in contradiction in this paragraph, because he seems to give two different reasons. First, he says that if he exposes the more, then why can't he expose the metaphysics, he says, because if he does, he says that he's going to be a target of the arrows of every conceited fool. That's the first reason. The second reason, he says, is because he can't disclose it. He's not allowed to disclose it because it's against the will of God. That God's will is that most of humanity has to remain in ignorance when it comes to these most important truths. But that's the will of God. You can't question it, and we have no right to change it. So it would seem that if you have the second reason, you wouldn't have to have the first. And it seems he's going on two different tracks. I mean, is he worried about himself, that he's going to be a target? And, of course, I mean, his concern about himself is not personal. Later on, no concern about his own personal well-being. I mean, his own personal honor, but he meant that that would be bad for Amon Am in general, that he should become such a target. but the question is, he seems to be saying two different things. It seems like a contradiction. Either on the one hand, he can't go against God's will and reveal it to the people because that's bad for the people. On the other hand, he's saying that he can't do it because he has to remain. He needs a certain protection from the arrows of the conceited. So, what is the answer to this contradiction in this same paragraph? This one paragraph. So, what I want to mention is this: that what the Rambam is saying is that when it comes to the Hamon Am, there are two kinds of things that they. The way they relate to Yahadus is in two ways. In one way is that they have certain cherished ideas, certain cherished thoughts. And those, and that again is throughout the Mara. The Rambam, you'll notice that also, that idea itself surfaces throughout the Mara. That the Hamona, on a certain cherished thoughts, which the Rambam describes, he says that they consider to be their treasures. So the moment you show them that these cherished ideas are not true, they get extremely angry and they attack. That's the first part of the Rambam, first part of the paragraph. The second part, he says, in the second part he says, but the Hamon Am also have certain ideas which they abide by, but they also dislike them, you see. In other words, the Hamon Am has certain ideas that they like and they won't give up. They have certain ideas that they accept that they dislike. All right, because, and it has to be that way, because the Hamon Am doesn't have true knowledge. So since the Hamon Am does not have true knowledge, because that's, as the Rambam says, that has been hidden from them, so the way they relate to the system of Torah is based purely on an emotional kind of an attitude. Now, in that emotional attitude, there's a certain polarization. There are two areas. One area they're attracted to and they love, and they're very happy with those things. The other area, they're really unhappy with the ideas, but they are forced to accept them. They have to accept them, because that's the nature of Hamona. In other words, certain ideas they dislike and they accept as a matter of conscience, that they have to accept it, and certain ideas they accept because they love. But that is the way the emotional life of man is going to have to express itself when it tries to relate to the Das or Emes, to the true religion of Yahadus. It's going to have to wind up working, relating to it in that manner. And that's not bad. I want you to understand. I mean, for the Hamon Am, that is the proper thing, and that is the way it's supposed to be. As the Rambam says, that is God's will. Okay? But for the Chachamim, have a whole different insight. I mean, this, of course, is the most fundamental principle of Yahadus, that the Chachmei Yisrael, that's why the Chachmei Yisrael are the ones that are in charge of the Mesorah and the whole Derech HaTorah, and then the Chochmas HaTorah, and the Psak Halacha, from Nigla to Nistar, straight through, is all in the hands of the Chachamim. I mean, that's the whole system. That the Chachmei Yisrael, Sanhedrin, Lishkas HaGozis, that's Kol HaTorah Kula, rests in their hands. Okay, because they are the only ones that really see it and really understand it properly. Hamon Am have a totally distorted view, although it is a kind of relationship. Again, I mean, I'm not, the Rambam's not saying that the way they live is bad. For them, that's the best way. It has to be that way. That's God's will. It has to be the way. That is the best thing for them. But the way they work, their attitude works with two different themes, and they're kind of contradictory. But that's the way the emotions work. In other words, one, certain things they love, and certain things they hate but are forced to accept. And that's exactly the meaning of this whole paragraph. That's why the Rambam, that's the underlying unification of this paragraph. What the Rambam is saying is that if he were to expose in detail the truths, the metaphysical truths, two things would happen. The areas which they cherish and they love, okay, that they're never going to give up. Even though those ideas are erroneous, they won't give them up because they love them. And what they're going to do is they're just going to shoot darts at anybody who tries to break it down. That's the first part. The other part is certain ideas that they have that they dislike, but they accept them because they believe the Torah says that this is the way it is, and they are forced and bound to follow those ideas even though they dislike them and they would like to remove themselves from them, but they must accept them. It's a matter. They operate in that sphere as a matter of conscience. So he says that area, if they would hear the ideas, they would it would completely break down. They would abandon those. They would abandon those ideas because they don't like those ideas. They don't like them. They're forced to accept them, but they accept them as a matter of authority. But they think that it's right and they have to accept them. But if you would show them that those ideas are really not so, then they would abandon them, and that would harm them. You see. So that's why it's not a contradiction, because at first sight the paragraph seems like a contradiction, because here the Rambam says in the end that you can't disclose certain ideas to the masses, to the Amon Am, because if you do disclose to the Amon Am, then what's going to happen is you're going to be harming them. It's supposed to be that's God's will, they shouldn't know these things. So that would seem, if that's the case, so then why are they shooting dots? Why are they shooting arrows? But the answer is, the Rambam in this paragraph basically summarizes the whole mentality of the Hamon. And in the mentality of the Hamon, there are two opposites, the way they relate to the system. One way is certain things that they really cherish and hold on to. And in that area, if you try to show them it's not exactly the way they think, but there's something deeper, they're going to get upset and angry because they must have it. Okay? On the other hand, there are certain areas which they accept certain things which they dislike, but because they feel the religious obligation to accept it. Now, if you're going to show them that that's not true, then that's going to be broken down, and then they're going to abandon the whole derech and the whole system. And that is against God's will. That's what Ram means. God's will is that they should relate to Yahadus in their shallow manner, where they accept it out of a certain religious, even though they dislike certain things, they accept it out of a certain religious obligation. And if you're going to break that down, then you're going to lose the Hamon, and that's against God's will, because God's will is that the Hamon Am should. It is for their benefit and for the benefit of Kol Yisrael that they have to relate to the system in that way, because they have no choice, because they don't have any knowledge. I mean, in other words, I'm just giving a mushal, I'm not really thinking into the mushal. I'm just giving a mushal, throwing it out just as a simple example, because it's always easier for the mind to focus when there's an example. But let's say, for instance, like Lashon Hara. But Amon dislikes the fact that they can't speak Lashon Hara. They hate that. But they accept it because they know the Torah says that, you know, it's a terrible thing, and they accept it as a matter of conscience. But if you were to show them that the reason why it's not good, it's not because of what they think, but because of something else, the moment you're going to break down what they think is wrong with it, they're liable to abandon it. So that's why you can't do that. You can't break down the religious conscience of the people. That would be wrong. On the other hand, there are certain ideas which they cherish and they love, which are folly, and if you try, and in exposing the truth, you're going to be running against that too, and therefore they're going to, then they're going to get angry, and they're going to try to destroy the individual who makes such claims and such reveal such knowledge. Okay, that's basically the underlying idea in that paragraph of his introduction. It's not a contradiction. It's simply two ways of the Hamon Am, the way they have to relate to Yahadus. And that's why he says he mentions both things. But now, getting back, the reason I mention this is because Joey asked the question, is it harmful or is it beneficial? So my answer is like this, to give somebody knowledge. So my answer is that basically it is, there are three cases. The two cases are mentioned here. Namely, those things which are cherished, okay, if you reveal it to them and you show them why they're making a mistake, so those cherished things, you're not going to harm them other than the fact that they're going to attack the one who is the author of those statements. That's one kind of harm. The second kind of harm is far worse. That's the harm that he mentioned at the end of the paragraph, where they abide by certain things in Yahadus because they have a certain religious conscience about it. So there, if you expose to them and you show them that they misunderstand it, it's not really They think that it's a terrible thing because of whatever, and you show them that's not true. You argue that you show them that can't be the reason, so then they're going to abandon the whole thing because they're not ready to accept the real reason, and the false reason which guided them, you're going to show them is not true, and they are happy to abandon it because they don't like these things. They just accept them as a matter of conscience. So then you really will be causing them tremendous harm because you're removing them, further away from the truth. Even the Hamonam, even though they don't have a correct perception, but you have to understand that they are in a certain proximity to the truth. And that's another thing that the Mora always brings out. I mean, that's why he gives the mushal later, the famous mushal, where the person standing outside the house, face towards the house, back towards the house, in the courtyard, and inside the house, the whole mushal of the distance between an individual and the knowledge of God. So the Hamonim are outside, but they're still within a certain proximity. So, I mean, you can't... It's not that the Rambam is degrading them. On the contrary, they have a certain level. And that's God's will, that they should be on that level for their benefit, for the benefit of the perpetuation of the system. That's all God's chachmah. That's the way it should be. But if you break that down, then of course you're harming them directly. That would be so there's two kinds of information. The information of the cherished things, where the harm is in terms of the attack. The information which is those things which they dislike, but they nevertheless accept them as a matter of conscience. If you break that down, then they're simply going to abandon, and then they will be further removed from the truth. Okay, further away from the truth, that is a serious harm. Now, those are two types of knowledge. Now, the other kind is the kind where the Rambam was talking to his Talmud in the very beginning. In the letter to his Talmud, before he starts the introduction. But in the letter, the very letter that he writes to his Talmud, that's something else. Because the Talmud was not a member of the Hamonam, and that he makes clear. And as I mentioned last time, he was a Gadol B'Yisrael. Great giant. But the thing is that over there, the Rambam says, in spite of that, since he was on a course where he was a navach, in other words, he was caught between in that dilemma, which we discussed last time, which is he simply had no way of functioning, because he was caught in the dilemma of two sources of knowledge that were contradicting each other. One was the knowledge of the truth of the Masorah, and he understood the truth of the Masorah, and he knew why the Masorah is true, and he accepted. He embraced all the truths that the Masorah sets forth, on the one hand. On the other hand, his entrance into the world, into the real world of Chochmah, you see, brought him into a contradiction. So over there, that kind of a person, that's a different situation. That's a very specific situation. Over there, the Rambam would say that the Rambam says he did not give the student the knowledge, because over there, since he was in this dilemma, giving him the knowledge would impact on his soul in a way that he'd be so gratified to be out of the dilemma, you see, that gratification would take the soul, the mind's eye, so to speak, away from the truth. But when it appears naturally, and that's what I elaborated on last time, when it appears naturally, that doesn't happen. On the contrary, when it appears naturally, then the mind really embraces the truth, and the dilemma becomes something of the past. Whereas when the person is engaged in that dilemma, to give him that knowledge would be harmful to the soul. So in answer to your question, the person being on his deathbed, it would seem that in all three cases that we've mentioned, the answer is no. That you should not give him the person on his and that's what I mentioned last time, that everybody's on their deathbed in terms of knowledge, because Chazal say you don't know how long you're going to live. L'olam yashlu shadam limuda. So in those three areas, the answer is definitely no. It's not good for the Hamonam in terms of the area where the person will shoot arrows, It's not good for the Hamonam in the part of their religion which they dislike but they accept as a matter of religious conscience. That's bad for them also if you undermine that, because then you undermine their whole relationship to Yadav. And the third thing is the person caught in the dilemma, it's not good for him either, because he will be so gratified about the solution to his own conflict that will absorb all his energy, and he will not be and he will not be attached to the world of ideas. That's a very high level. That's a level for the Rambam's Talmud, and that's basically the idea. Also, that metaphysical part of that is the idea that metaphysical knowledge has to be attained by the individual himself in a natural way. Okay. So in all three cases, the answer is no. There's only one exception, and the exception is, and I believe we mentioned this before, the exception is where a person has an idea that is absolutely harmful, and that idea removes him from God, and then that idea, it's important to convey to him and to tell him, even though he will never get to that idea. And the Rambam wrote that in a letter. I forgot, somebody mentioned the... I think it was Pacey mentioned where the Rambam mentions that's why he wrote certain facts in the beginning of the Rambam in the Yesodei HaTorah. He mentions that he disclosed certain facts, certain final results, because he said that he saw that people have such crazy ideas that some people think maybe God's physical. And there's certain basic points which, if a person harbors those ideas, he's completely removed from God, and the only thing he can do is benefit him by teaching him that those ideas are wrong. So that's the only exception. Although I say the only, I don't mean it's small in number. I mean, on the contrary, that could be, depending on the door, depending on the situation, that could be a very large part of the population. So that, the Rambam says, that you must do. You must do. And that's one of those ideas, I think, today, in the current world, today's world, I think, is the idea that people must know that that when a person is mispal to Hashem, to God, that he does not help God in any way whatsoever. And that's something which is the yesod of our das, and if a person has the wrong idea over there, then he is completely off course, and no matter what he does, no matter how many mitzvahs he does, he's completely off the whole Derech Hashem. So that kind of knowledge you must convey to people, and they must know that. That's why you have it in Yom Kippur and Nila, that Yitzchak Mayitelach. That everything that we do in order to perfect ourselves does not in any way affect God. It only affects ourselves. That idea, which I would say is very prevalent today, a lot of people misunderstand that, that's something which must be taught. You must teach that idea. And you cannot wait until people arrive at the idea through a natural course. And it doesn't matter if people will throw arrows at you, and it doesn't matter if... and you mustn't be afraid that you're going to undermine... Are you going to undermine the system? Because there's no system. If a person has that misconception that the creator of the universe is affected by his tefillah, by his good deed, then his whole idea of God is completely distorted, and everything he does is completely worthless. So that idea, as an example, I give that example because I think that at least my experience has been that a lot of people don't really know this, and therefore they harbor this false notion, and they're really completely removed from the true idea of God. So that is something which must be taught. That's something which must be taught. You cannot wait for people to unravel or arrive at that conclusion by themselves. It's not a matter of metaphysics. And it's something which must be given to them. Not only it's not a question of on their deathbed; it's a question of immediate. It must be done immediately. That's the Rambam and Kansipar, and the Rambam, and this is the yesod of our knowledge of God. That yesod, even though it's a metaphysical yesod, but the basic conclusion must be known by everyone. That God is not affected. He doesn't change. He's not affected by tefillah. He, nani Hashem lo shanisi, and whatever we do, it's only, the change is only in us. It's only in us. And if a person has a misconception in that area, his whole relationship to God is completely broken, and the whatever he does has no value. So that's there. Then that's how I'm answering. I'm answering your question, Joey. There are four different types of knowledge, and in three of them the answer is no, and the fourth the answer is yes, that you must teach the individual. Okay, so I hope we clarified that point.
Rebbe?
Yes.
In the third type of knowledge where the guy's in a dilemma, and you giving him the answer will make him so gratified that he won't continue. Isn't that opposite of what how we hold knowledge to be? Because if a guy, like you said, there was a student of the Rambam on a very high caliber, and he gets the gratification from this amount of learning, won't he naturally go to seek other questions? And won't his knowledge...
No, I can't expand on that. I really can't expand on that. It has nothing to do, because the idea of knowledge over here is a different idea of knowledge than a college concept of knowledge. The college idea of knowledge is a textbook knowledge. It's not the kind of knowledge that the Rambam is talking about. It's not the kind of knowledge that Yehuda is talking about. Different kind of thing. It's not a matter of him going on to other questions. It's like, it's not like mathematics where the guy, okay, now you go on to algebra, now you're going to move on to higher mathematics. That's not what it is.
But don't we hold that the guy thinking in the knowledge gives him pleasure, so he's naturally going to go
into
pleasure?
I can't go into that. I simply can't go into that because I will get lost. You'll just have to accept the framework that we're talking about a high individual. So a lot of times when we're describing things that are above ourselves, it's very difficult to describe it, and it's a waste of time to go into it because it's like talking about Nevoah. I mean, certain things you say about Nevoah, but certain things you can't say because we're not Nevi'im, so we don't know. So I can't go into it any further. I just could say basically that what the point is that it has to do with a certain way the soul works and the energies of the soul and the attachment of the soul towards knowledge. And that in a certain situation, the situation of the dilemma is one where there's a lot of energy caught up in the dilemma itself, for a good reason. It's not for a bad reason, because on the one hand, your mind tells you that this Messiah is 100% true. On the other hand, your mind tells you that the system of knowledge is 100% true. You're caught, the mind is caught, the soul is caught. That's the Rambam's unique case for which he wrote the Mora. That's a certain unique kind of a situation, and in the dynamics of that situation, to give the person the answer would be harmful, because the satisfaction of the solution is what's going to preoccupy him, and it will remove energy from the area of knowledge itself. I can't say more than that. That's it. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So now, what I'd like to do... let me just come back to the Asiya and the Limud part, which I thought I'd finish that off, and maybe actually that'll be, that would fit in over here. That's another concept of the of metaphysics. Let me just finish that, and then we'll go back to the Vayita Eishel Bezer Shavir Hashem Hashem and Hashem Kelolam. But the idea of the we mentioned before, the closeness of Asiya and Limud. Asiya and Limud are like two sides of one coin, and that is based on a theory of the Rambam and the Mora, and something which we've mentioned many times, I believe, and that is that knowledge is not the mechanics of the brain. The mechanics of the brain can work out mathematical problems. That's the mechanics of the brain. That's why the Rambam considers math to be something which is a kind of a touchstone for the ability of thinking. But that's correct. It's a barometer for the ability of thinking. I mean, it's a test, and it could determine the level of the individual's mental capacity in a certain area, an important area, but that's something which the mind can work out, and that's one kind of thinking. But what the Rambam calls knowledge is something else. What the Rambam calls knowledge is based on an idea of the Rambam, one of the ideas that I believe he is discussing when he says that it's scattered throughout the Mara and it appears here and there. But that is the idea. It's a significant idea. I'll just on our level, I'll just give you the Rosh Hashanah program over here. And that idea is the idea of influence. Okay? In the Mora, there's a concept of influence, which is an abstract idea, and it's an idea which I believe the Rambam himself says he can't really define it precisely, but it's a very significant concept, the idea of influence. And the idea of influence, of course, the way the universe of the Rambam, the universe of the Rambam, there was an idea of influence. We have to, the question is, you know, in terms of the modern ideas of the cosmos, how that idea applies. I'm not going to go into that right now. But the concept is, and that I think I mentioned last time, that the difference, for the Rambam, the difference between knowledge and nevuah is not qualitative but quantitative. That nevuah is a receiving of knowledge through, I'll say descriptively, through divine influence. Okay, through divine influence. And chachmah is the same thing. Chachmah is a receiving of knowledge through divine influence. When I say knowledge, again, I don't mean the mechanical knowledge that the brain is capable of working out, like knowledge of engineering, or like architecture, or something which the brain, or even mathematics, but it is certain ideas, certain realities, which those ideas, when the soul grasps those ideas, those ideas actually cause a realization of the soul. The soul becomes realized, and the soul, it unravels. It becomes actualized, I should say. They're actualized. Those ideas actualize the soul and place the soul in a certain, gives it a certain attitude towards reality and towards God. Now, that kind of knowledge is attained through influence, through divine influence. So and that is real knowledge. When Ram talks about knowledge, that's the kind of knowledge he's talking about. And maybe we'll come back to that. There's a lot of parts in the Mora that have to do with that idea, the idea of influence. But for the Rambam, I mean nevuah and chachma, a real, genuine, true chachma, where the soul is chachma, which When the soul partakes of this chachma, it becomes actualized. It's not like an external acquisition. See, mathematics is an external acquisition. The mind mechanically works things out and can draw certain conclusions. Okay? It can draw certain conclusions. That's an acquisition. But the knowledge which causes the soul to be real, actualized, that's a different kind of a thing. And that stems from divine influence. Of course, you need certain kalim for that. And the kalim that you need for that is the mental apparatus. He must have, that's what Aram writes in the beginning, that his Talmud, at first he thought he wasn't capable, but then he saw how good he was in mathematics and astronomy, and he realized that he has the mind, he has the capacity, and without that, of course, you can't, there's no way that the person can attain the knowledge. The divine influence cannot be chal. I mean, it has to have a place, a receptacle, has to have a vehicle, and that vehicle is the perfection of the human mind. So according to the way the Rambam perceives it, and I believe this is one of those things that the Rambam's talking about, that appears here and there, and surfaces here and there, is the idea of influence, which means that knowledge, according to the Rambam, is really the actualization of the soul of man. And all of man, it's an idea, by the way, I mean, that is completely, completely different from the whole way the world looks at a human being. I mean, it's a completely different view. Okay? The secular view of man is completely apart from this way of thinking. And this way of thinking sounds alien to this, to the secular view. And the reason for it is because the secular view is rooted in the instinctual. You see, the secular view of what a human being is, of what we are, is rooted in the instinctual. It takes its security and its sense of reality of what we are from the fact that the instinctual overpowers man and is in constant domination of the soul of man. And because of that, the idea of what we are is a distorted one. It's like almost like a catch-22. You can't get the right idea of man because you're rooted in the instinctual. And you can't get out of the instinctual without the proper ideas. I mean, it's like I said, it's like a catch-22. But it's an extremely significant concept. In other words, in the Rambam, with the Rambam's views, I mean, this is the view of Yahadis, and really, it's the view of Nevuah. It's the view of Nevuah. That's why one of the Yesodei Hadas is Nevuah. Why is one of the Yesodei Hadas Nevuah? Kadosh Baruch Hu Menabe es Bnei Ha'adam. And what if he's not? And what if I don't know that? I don't know a lot of things by what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. So why is that so significant? The reason why it's so significant for the Rambam is because that's a whole different way of viewing man. You see, a whole different way of viewing man. And I'm not going to go into it too much, but just a basic description would be that man's physical self and man's psychological self and man's intellectual self, that which we call in our society the intellectual part of man, all those aspects of man are just like a shell and a vehicle which if tuned properly, and the imaginative faculty too, which all these things, if they're tuned properly, they are like, I would say the best marshal would be, they're like, then the person is like a receiver. Is like a receiver. And they're in a position to receive the divine influence, which is the true Chochmah. But Chochmah and Nevuah, like I said, according to the Rambam, and that's a Yesod in Yahadis, that Chochmah and Nevuah are really only different in quantity, not in quality. That both areas are the area. Then, when you get to that area, now you're talking about the soul itself, the essence of man, and everything else that we have is just a means. You see, just a means. The physical, the psychological, the intellectual, the imaginative—all those aspects of man are just a means to that work in harmony to create a perfect receiver, so to speak. And then the divine influence conveys knowledge to man. Knowledge, or if under certain conditions, if the receiver is really perfected, it's Nevuah. But that's really a Yesod in Yahadis, and it's a whole different understanding of what man is. Metaphysical man is the essence of man. That is the real man. That is the real natural man. And the idea, the worldly idea, the secular idea of the natural man, especially the anthropological idea, I would say is on the other end of the spectrum. The anthropological idea of man is that the natural man is to be found somewhere in a paradise where the individual is in harmony as an animal would be in harmony with his environment. That's the anthropological view of man. That's the natural man the anthropologist is looking for. No such man exists. The natural man is the individual where all the means are developed, all the faculties are developed, and now his soul is in a position to receive knowledge through divine influence. He's a receiver. And that knowledge, when it's received, is not an external acquisition, but rather is an actualization of the soul of man, and his essence becomes actualized. And then his existence becomes real. That's what the Rambam talks about, going from potentiality to actuality. That's basically the idea. But it's a whole different idea of what man is. And it's a yesod. That's why the Rambam, for the Rambam, anyone that's kofer and nevuah, he could believe in God, you see, but if he denies nevuah, he's denying the Gimli Karim, because that's the yesod adas. It has to do with your understanding. The yesod adas is that there can't be, you can't have the das unless you understand man. A certain basic understanding of man and knowledge and chokhmah is necessary in order to relate to God properly. If you don't have that basic understanding, you can't relate to God, and the foundations have been undermined. Okay, that's basically the idea. Maybe we'll come back to it. There's a lot to talk about with regard to. I'm just trying to give the most basic, briefest exposition of what this is, because I feel that it should be known at least on a basic level. They should have an idea, at least an idea about it. But that's basically the issue here. Okay. Any questions? Okay. All right. If not, let's go back to to what we were doing. All right. Okay. I want to go back to the area of Vayita Eishel Bever Shova Vayikra Shom B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam. Okay. Now just give me 1 minute here, all right? All right. I want to say like this: that we're going through, and eventually, I'd like to explain the Rambam's answer, the Rambam's sheet in Kabbanis. I mean, you know, the difficult question the Ramban asks on the Rambam in Kabbanis and the Mora. Get back to that eventually. Work our way back toward that. But the thing that we mentioned last time was the idea of Kabbanis, and we showed from the Rambam in the Yad that what is Mizbeach? Odom in the Kom Kaparos on Nivro. Okay, so man was created from his Mokom Kapara, and we said that's the Yesod in Odom. That man is the Yesod in the function of man. That man has to, man always has to fail, and then he comes back. Because the instinctual is always overpowers. And it's an interesting thing that the Rambam in his introduction to the Mara, the Rambam says like this. The Rambam says, well, he gives a mushal. He gives a mushal. A lot of things in this mushal. I just want to address one of them. He says, okay. Paragraph says, do not imagine that these most difficult problems can be thoroughly understood by any one of us. This is not the case. He says, at times the truth shines so brilliantly that we perceive it as clear as day. Our nature and habit then draw a veil over our perception, and we return to a darkness almost as dense as before. We are like those who, though beholding frequent flashes of lightning, still find themselves in the thickest darkness of the night. On some, the lightning flashes in rapid succession, and they seem to be in continuous light, and their night is as clear as the day. This was the degree of prophetic excellence attained by Moses, the greatest of prophets, to whom God said, but as for thee, stand thou here by me. Poem Odi Madi. Around Poem Odi Madi doesn't mean standing by God, doesn't mean in a physical way, I mean, because it's impossible, but it means simply that the knowledge of God, and of whom it is written, the skin of his face shone. Okay, yeah, interesting. Okay, we'll get back to that. But what I want, the point I want to make over here is like this. I just want to correct myself. Just give me a second. I have to. Yeah, yeah. My point is this: that the Rambam. What is the Rambam saying over here? I want to emphasize this one part of it. Oh, excuse me. What the Rambam is saying is that the reason why we can't perceive certain ideas, interesting. See, certain philosophers thought that why can't man kilei or any other v'chai, why can't man perceive true ideas about God? I mean, on his level, of course, why can't he ultimately gain the knowledge that he's searching for on his level within his framework, like Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah. So most people think because man is physical and everything we have goes through the senses, so everything is veiled, and intrinsically we're limited because of the fact that that our knowledge is tied to the physical in this existence. That is not what the Rambam says. It's interesting. The Rambam does not say that. The Rambam says that the reason is because of the instinctual. Because what happens is that actually, according to the Rambam, you would be able to perceive the truth clearly. And he says that you can't. You see, he says that at times the truth shines so brilliantly that we perceive it as clear as day. Our nature and habit then draw a veil over our perception, and we return to a darkness almost as dense as before. What the Rambam says is the reason why we can't really perceive the metaphysical ideas, what stands in the way of the perception of the true metaphysical ideas, is the instinctual energies that constantly that wax and wane in our personal existence. That's really the problem. The problem is an energy problem. It's not a problem of the fact that we perceive things in this existence through the senses, like through the eyes. You need, without the eyes, you wouldn't have any vision. You wouldn't have any chokhmah. And that's true. But it's not what the philosophers say, that the senses are the windows of the soul. And since we have these windows, and these windows aren't really that great, so that's why we can't perceive it. It's interesting. The Rambam does not go that way. The Rambam says the reason is because of the dispensation of energies. That the instinctual energies always, they can, for a time, they subside, and then when they do, the truth is visible, but then again, they start overpowering us, and then the truth becomes hidden. Okay? Similar to what I said before, that on a basic level, that the anthropologist's idea of what a natural man is, okay, is based on the fact, the secular idea, the college idea, the university idea of man, is based upon the reason why he can't see what man really is, what the real natural man is because of the passions, the energies of the instinctual. See, that's what the Rambam is saying, basically. That's what the Rambam is saying, yeah. Yeah. Now, what was it? Now just a moment. Just give me a second. So this ties into what we were mentioning before. The concept we were discussing, Adam in Mekom Kaparasa Nivra. You see, that's really the same idea. Why? What is the fundamental concept of Mizbeach, which we said that Mizbeach? You'll notice the way the Torah has Mizbeach, that the Torah doesn't even mention Karbonos when the Torah mentions Mizbeach, okay? It mentions Adam, it mentions the idea of Mizbeach, the concept of Mizbeach itself. So Adam in Mekom Kaparos on Nivra, that is the concept. This idea that the Rambam is expressing over here in the Mora, that is exactly the idea. The idea is Adam in Mekom Kaparos on Nivra means that there is Man is essentially has an overpowering instinctual energy, and that's why he always needs kapara. Kapara means when he's in recoil from those energies. He's in a state of recoil. That's kapara. But when he's active, the instinctual component is active, then he strays, and then he can't see the truth, like the Rambam says. At times he says that it's as clear as day. The truth shines so brilliantly that we perceive it as clear as day. That's when the instinctual energies are not overpowering. He says Our nature and habit then draw a veil over our perception, and we return to a darkness almost as dense as before. That's the idea of Adam in Mekom Kaparasa Nivra. That's a yesod. Basically, it's a mizbeach, really. Adam in Mekom Kaparasa Nivra is really a yesod in the whole function, the whole way that Tzelem Olakim works. And that's why man has a greater... How could Moshe Rabbeinu really ask God, Harini Noas Kodecha? I mean, then God says, well, Irani Adam Vahoy. I mean, didn't he know that? Why did he ask for it? The answer is because there is one part of man that has that potential. There is a part of man that has that potential and that has that desire to have the ultimate knowledge. But Lo Yirani Adam V'Choy is because what the Rambam says, that the times the truth shines so brilliantly we perceive it as clear as day, that's Harini Nos Kodecha. But then our nature and habit then draw a veil over our perception, we turn to the darkness almost as dense as before. That's Lo Yirani Adam V'Choy. And that's basically the principle. That's the principle of Mizbeach. Adam in Mekom Kaparasa Nivra. That is one yesod. And that's why, again, the Torah emphasizes Mizbeach. Yofi Lecho Mizbeach, like the Gemara says in Sukkah, that they you even have a right to humanize, to talk to the Mizbeach like it's a personality. Because whenever you do that, that means that it's a tremendous yesod in Yahadus. That is the yesod. Yofi Lecho Mizbeach, the recognition of the fact that Adam in Mekom Kaparasa Nivra. And that's the yesod in Adam, and that's why he strays. He always goes. Mizbeach means, Mekom Kaparasa Nivra means that man is constantly moving forward, moving backward, moving forward, moving backward. There is no even flow, and the brilliance of the truth shining forth is only momentary. Then he goes back again. That's Mimakom Kaparasa. He must have Kapara. He must always go up and back, forward and backward. He can't pursue an even course. That's because of his nature. That's the Yisod of Mizbeach. That's one Yisod of Mizbeach. Okay. But what I want to do, I want to go a little further with Mizbeach. And I want to show that is one aspect of Mizbeach, but there's another aspect of Mizbeach. Vayikra Shom B'Shem Ad Hashem Kelolam. Because if you remember, we said that the idea of karbanos carries, there's another idea of karbanos. And the other idea of karbanos is that Lashem Ha'aretz Ha'Malala. Okay? Yeah. Because the idea of being makriv karbanos, that's by Kayin and Hevel. That, Hevel hezi mibachoros sono mechelvehen. Mechelvehen, that means from the best. Mechelvehen, chelav means always best. Ve'achileu mechelav chita. So he brought the best. Why did he bring the best? Because he had the recognition of Lashem Ha'aretz Ha'Malala. And that's an expression, and that's a genuine expression of Lashem Ha'aretz Ha'Malala through being makriv kabanos. And to be makriv kabanos, and that is another theme of Mizbeach. Okay, it's interesting. That's another theme of Mizbeach. You see that Mizbeach basically has two themes. One theme is kapara, and that's the whole philosophy of the knowledge of man, how man attains knowledge and how he relates to knowledge. And the second theme is that the theme of Lev Hashem Ha'aretz Ha'Malala. Yeah. It's an interesting thing. The question is, Where do you see that theme? You see that theme, interestingly enough, right after that, Vayita Eshel Bever Shova, Vayikra Shem B'Shem Ad Hashem Kel Olam. So it says, Vayogar Avrom Be'eretz Plishtim Yomim Rabin. And then after that, it says, "Vayhi achar advarim o'ela, v'olakim nisos Avram." V'olakim nisos Avram. That's in Bereshis Chof Beis Pasuk Aleph. So question is, of course, Chazal asked right away, what's Achar Advar Mo'ela? That was actually 12 years later. So what's Achar Advar Mo'ela? What's the relationship to the previous, from the previous parsha to this parsha? So the Gemara says, in Sanhedrin, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yechanan Mishim Rabbi Yossi Ben Zimra, Achar Dvarav Shel Satan. That Achar Advar Mo'ela means the words of the Satan. Dichsiv. Vayigdal hayeled vayigamal vayas Avram mishtegadol. So when Yitzchak was weaned, Avram made a big party. Amar Satan lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Satan said to God, Zokin zeh, this old man, chaynanto lemeya shana b'fri voten. 100 years old, he gave him children. Mikol se'uda she'osa lo hoyalo tor o gozo echad lahakriv lefanecha. From all the Suda they made, tremendous Suda, where all the Gedolei Ador came, and he couldn't find himself one pigeon to be makrif for you? Omar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Klum Oso Ela Bishvil Benau. Okay, the only reason he did it was because of his son. Imani Omar lo Zavach Es Bincho Lefanai Miyad Zavcho. If I would request of him that he sacrifices his son, immediately he would sacrifice him. Miyad v'alakim nisos avram. Interesting. Yeah. What is this? What is the meaning of this dialogue between Kadosh Baruch Hu and the Satan? So basically, what the Satan said was, that the that Avram Avinu was derelict because here he made this whole mishta. But he forgot to be makriv carbon. Interesting. He forgot to be makriv carbon. So what do you mean, he forgot to be makriv carbon? It means to say that the yesod, which is the yesod of Mizbeach, that which is Lashem Ha'aretz Meloa, he forgot, you see. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said just a moment, he said this whole suda he made because of his son. Even his son, he would be makriv in a moment. Avraham Avinu wasn't necessary. It wasn't necessary for him to be Makrif Kabanis, because the Lord Hashem Ha'aretz Meloa extended so far that he didn't even have a sense of ownership over his son, over his own son. He didn't feel that he has that his son is his. So that was the tshuva that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to the son. But what does that show you? That shows you the second yisod of Mizbeach. The second yesod of Kabbonis. The second yesod of Kabbonis is really Lord Hashem Ha'aretz Meloah. Okay? So you see, Mizbeach really revolves around two yesods. And I want to show you that this yesod expresses itself in other places too. Like the Rambam says, that it appears, yesodos appear in different areas. Take a look, for instance, in Vayetze. Interesting thing. By the Mizbeach in Vayetze. So you have the Chalom of Yaakov, okay, Sula Mutavarta of Rosh Magia Shamaimo, and then it says, Vayika Chaka Mishinasa, Vayashkin Yaakov Baboker, Vayika Chaso Evan Ashesomer Ashosov, Vayosem Oso Matseva, Vayitok Shemen El Rosha. Okay, so that was Matseva, that was the idea of Mizbeach. And so, Vayida Yaakov Medalema, Emiya Lakimi Madi, Mishmarani Vadakhatash Nanachi Halech, and Nasu Lechem Lechel Veged Lilbosh. He says, Vishaptishon Beis Ovi, Yadashim Lilu Lakim, Vo'evan Azosa Shasamti Matseva, he says, Yia Beis Elohim, Vachoil Asher Titanli Aser Aserenu Lach. Okay? So, what is it? Suddenly he brings in. He brings in Misa. Now it's interesting. The Ibn Ezra says like this. The Ibn Ezra says the Tam Yia Beis Elekim. He says Mokom Kavua L'Sfilasi Ulahotzi Sham Misa Nikol Asher Titanli Momon L'Sito L'Mishu Roy L'Kachto L'Chlor Hashem. Okay. So Yaakov Avinu is interesting thing. Even though he was the Bechir Shabavos, still, he gave tzedakah to others. found to shame, to other individuals, because that's what he said. He gave mamon l'sito l'misha who roi l'kachto l'chvar Hashem. So there was the Beis HaMedrash of Shem Vayver. So apparently that was an institution that that Yaakov Avinu supported. An interesting thing, amazing thing. Here he was the one, the whole pillar of Klal Yisrael. And yet he gave him his own money to support the yeshiva of Shem Vayver or others. That doesn't mention it, but that's what you see here clearly. It's an amazing, amazing thing. But I want to get to this point. It says like this. It says, Makom kavur l'sfilasi l'hotzi shom maisa mikol. Okay, l'hotzi shom maisa mikol asher titulit. Yeah. So what do you mean? I mean, why do you have to have a makom for maisa? What's the Ben Ezra says? Makom, v'chol, why do you have to have a makom for maisa? He said, what's wrong? Give maisa at home. Okay, person makes $100, gives 10%, he makes her a check for $10. So what does he have to? What's the makom for maisa? See, what is the place? Okay, but the answer is that maisa really, and that's what the Ibn Ezra is trying to explain, that for even azos asher samti matzeva yia beis elokim v'chol asher titun li aser asren aloch. What does it have to do? What does one part of the pasuk have to do with the other? For even azos asher samti matzeva yia beis elokim. Fine. You want to say it's a makom tzila? Fine. But what's the cholosh atikun liyaseh asren aloch? So the Ibn Ezra says no, that the makom amizbeach, and that's one of the ideas I think that we were working on the last few weeks. That as the pasuk says, el makom amizbeach asher hoya sham barishana. There's a concept of makom amizbeach, because the mizbeach really was something that was made and had a kedushas makom, because that makom was supposed to function to bring man to a certain realization, certain ideas, just like the Beis HaMikdash did. That's why they say yeah, Beis HaLakim, Beis HaMikdash, the same thing, the exact same thing. The makom that Yaakov Avinu was kaveya, the kviyas makom HaMizbeach, is the same concept as the makom HaMikdash. It means that in that place, a certain idea, the place was designated, and that was really the whole concept of Mizbeach. The concept of Mizbeach was to create, and that's why I mentioned, you know, that the fact that you don't see that there were makrif kabanas. It doesn't say there were makrif kabanas. Why? Kabanas is not the important thing. Kabanas, of course, is something you do with the Mizbeach, but the Mizbeach, the idea of Mizbeach is so overpowering. It's not just when you're being makriv the carbon, you see. Makriv the carbon is a momentary thing. And it's a demonstration, of course, a difficult thing for a person to take from his money and being makriv and just goes up in thin air to demonstrate Lashem Oretz Malah. There, that's an Asayin, it's a difficult thing to do. But it's more than just that moment, you see. It's more than just that moment. The Mizbeach has a certain activity. But the Mizbeach is greater than the activity itself. The activity is just something which is a momentary overcoming of the instinctual. But the Kriyas Makom is really an establishment of that idea tied to this place. So when the person is in that place, that idea permeates the soul. Like the Rambam says, that's the moment of clarity and knowledge, where everything's as clear as day, before the instinctual nature comes back and overpowers the individual. That's the makom amizbeach. It's the moment of the lightning flash. It's the moment where the person partakes of the true idea. So what do you see from this? You see an interesting thing. You see that the b'chol asher titen li aser asren aloch, that miser, which really is basically tzedakah, is tied in very much with this idea. Why is it tied in with this idea? The answer is very simple. Because what is tzedakah? Tzedakah is Lashem Oretz Malach. That's what tzedakah basically is. Same thing, same idea. Isn't there a chazal that says tzedakah like Marcus Kabonis? I see there's a chazal idea. So it's the same exact idea. It means to say that tzedakah is the recognition that the makom HaMizbeach gives man, which is Lashem Oretz Malach. In other words, really, Tzedakah is not an activity, an extraneous activity, but tzedakah is a concept of bilus ha'adam. It's a concept of what is bilus ha'adam, and the recognition that bilus ha'adam is really a superficial artificiality. It's an artificiality, but really, when you think about human bilus, you must really think Lashem Aretz Maloa. That's the true idea, of bilus, and therefore you're not really giving stuff. You understand what I mean? That's why everybody questions. Why is it that the Navi says Lachu Navini Vachacha Yamar Hashem, that the pasuk says that the person is allowed to test HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, that one time, the one thing, the only thing, which is tzedakah, that the uvachanunin avizos, amar Hashem, you can test me with the idea of tzedakah. Why? It's very simple, the answer. The answer is because if a person gives mitzah, so it means that it's a different recognition of his bilus, different idea of his bilus, and it's a recognition of Lashem Aretz Maloa. If a person Lashem Aretz Maloa comes to that recognition, then there's a recognition which Makom HaMizbeach gives man that idea, then he's in the proximity of the true idea of God. And that area, you see, that's why giving Meiser is tied to Mizbeach. There's a minig that in shuls, to make appeals in shuls. So some people, the more refined people, they stop that. It's not the decorum. It's not appropriate in the synagogue. Gets the money, so they try to hide it. They give out cards sometimes, or they don't want to announce. Truth of the matter is, on the contrary, you see that minute to give money in shul goes back to Yaakov Avinu. V'chol asher titen li aser asrenu loch. So what does it mean? It means makom kavua l'tzilasi u'lahotzi shemaisa mikol asher titen li. Because giving tzedakah is not a commercial act of business. On the contrary, that is a recognition of Lashem Aretz Maloa and the makom ha'mizbeach, the makom ha'migdash, and the shul is a migdash ma'at. So that is the makom where the person is. It's not the money. The money liyah kesef liyah zov. The Kaddish Baruch Hu doesn't need anybody to support his institutions. The idea is that the person, when he gives tzedakah, that's when he attains the true idea of Lashem Aretz Maloa, and that needs the assistance of the Makom HaMizbeach. V'chol asher titen li aser asren aloch, the Makom HaMizbeach, Makom HaMikdash, the Makom of the Beis HaKnesses. That minig, really, to make an appeal to shul, is the right minig. To try to hide it and say that it's a commercial thing and we're ashamed of it, that's exactly the opposite of what the Das Torah is. On the contrary, that the shnadas and all the things they do, the marker for that minig is based on this pasuk, v'chol asher titen li aser asren aloch. Now, it's an interesting thing, you see. Just a second. Yeah. Now,
Rebbe?
Yeah.
Yeah, just in terms of the Kviyas Makam, there's a Rambam in Hilchos Malachim where he talks about Shochin Beretz Yisrael.
Excuse me?
Hello?
Yeah, I got try again.
No, when the Rambam speaks about Shochin Beretz Yisrael, so he says, the Chin HaKavah Ba in Chakarel, Ukhiru HaMakam Shehu Ba Mizbeach Kapara.
That's Russian?
Yeah.
Say it again.
It says, "Bechein ha'kavod bo, ba, mizchaper lo. Ukilu ha'makom shehu bo, mizbeach kapara."
Mizbeach kapara?
Yeah.
Where's that Rambam?
Yochus Malachim Hei, Perek Hei Yudal.
Oh, where he talks about what? V'chipa ad Moshe Amo?
Yeah.
Shochem Beretz Yisrael. Oh, Shochem Beretz Yisrael. You're very perfect, perfect. Let me do the Russian once more.
Mizbach kapara.
Mizbach kapara. Yeah, very good. Very good.
Very good.
Now, what I'd like to do is move on a little bit more with that idea of Lashem Aratz Malah, because that's a yesod, you see, which finds itself throughout the Torah. Where do you find it? What does this yesod really trace itself back to? It's an interesting thing. What does this yesod trace itself back to? It traces itself back to nothing less significant than the yesod of Shabbos. That's the yesod of Shabbos. What's the yesod of Shabbos? The yesod of Shabbos is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Borei Olam. That's the whole idea of Shmirah Shabbos. That's the whole idea of abstention from Malacha on Shabbos. And that concept permeates the system of mitzvahs of the Torah. What do you have? Not only on Shabbos Bereshis, but you have it. Where do you have it again? Openly in the Torah, in the Shabbos of Shemitah, the Shav Soh Oretz Shabbos L'Rishem. And what is Shemitah? Shkili Oretz. Shemitah is that L'Rishem Oretz Malah. So that's why the whole idea of Shemitah is the recognition the land isn't yours. The Shav Soh Oretz Shabbos L'Rishem. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu really is the Borei Olam, and everything belongs to him. That's Hashem Ha'aretz and the law, basically. So you see this Yesod of Mizbeach, the second Yesod of Mizbeach, which is the Yesod of Hashem Ha'aretz and the law, really permeates the entire Torah. And where it's found in Shabbos, it's found in Shemitah, and it could be traced one more step. What is the next step, really? What is the next step that it's traced to? The next. Okay, fine. Hashem Aratz Malah. What is it traced to? It's traced to the most fundamental yesod of Yahadus. And that is the yesod of Yesh Me'ayim. Because the fact that I give everything to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a matter of reality. Not a matter of chesed on my part. It's a matter of reality, because Hashem Aratz Malah. What does Hashem Aratz Malah mean? Hashem Aratz Malah means is the yesod, the most basic yesod of Kol HaTorah Kula. That is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Borei Olam, and he's Borei the Olam Yesh Me'ayin. You see, for instance, that's the yesod of Shabbos. That's a, what do you say in Tefillah Me'ayin Sheva? What do you say in Tefillah Me'ayin Sheva? You say Kone Shemayim V'Aretz. That's what Shem said. The Rambam says, what's Kone Shemayim V'Aretz? Kone Shemayim V'Aretz is Yesh Me'ayin, the Yesod of Yesh Me'ayin. So the Yesod of Shabbos is really the Yesod of Yesh Me'ayin. That's the Birchas Me'ayin Sheva. That's all Yesod of Shabbos, Yesod of Shemitah. Now, it's interesting. If you take a look at the Ramban on the Vayita Esho Bever Shova, Vayikra Shom B'Shem Arashem Kel Olam, so the interesting Ramban. Ramban says over there, he says, what is this B'Shem Arashem Kel Olam? So the Ramban says, the Ramban, first of all, yes. He says, "Pirsha Kosef Shekar B'Shem Hashem Hamanig." It's in Chaf Aleph Beresh Chaf Aleph Lamed Gimel. Hamanig B'Kocha Hazman Oshikro Shemayim V'Oretz Olam B'Loshon Habot Tamid B'Divir Rabosenu. So it means that the Olam is Shemayim V'Oretz. V'Odia B'Zeh Shekar V'Rom V'Odia L'Bios Sod Hanogas Ha'Olam B'Chlolo Shehu B'Shem Hashem Hechosin B'Koach. In other words, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really the force behind the whole Bria. That's what he says. That's his chat. B'Shem Hashem Kel Olam means the one who is the Manhig Olam, who is the force behind the entire world that we see. And he says, V'Rav Amar B'Mora HaNevuchim, he says, Shehu Romeiz L'Kadmasa.